And welcome into another edition of New Track Record. Caleb Hatch and Justin Kinney with you. Hello, Justin.
Hello, Caleb Hatch. How are you?
Doing well. Doing well. And we have a race with an asterisk.
We do.
To discuss this week.
Are you finally coming down off your thermal high that you had on Sunday?
I think so. I think there's been enough time in the gap between Sunday, early Sunday afternoon, and now and to now. Really process everything.
Yes, and what we saw, it was interesting. We'll just say that. We'll get into it. I don't think we're going to be as harsh as a lot of other people. We'll be fair, but we also will credit IndyCar for at least trying something.
Yes, and I think we have to balance those two things because the alternative is there's nothing on the schedule March 10th after St. Pete until April 21st with Long Beach.
And imagine this. Imagine if there was a six-week break and then it comes out, somebody has a story that says, well, IndyCar was considering having an exhibition race at Thermal in late March, but decided against it. How many people that are currently complaining would say, well, that's stupid. That's a no-brainer. Why didn't they do something to at least have cars on track to fill some time? Well, IndyCar did that, and now a fair amount of people are upset. Just no pleasing this fan base.
Right? I guess that's my biggest complaint on all of this. It has nothing to do with what happened at Thermal.
Right.
It's that when you look at this event, and we'll get into the event itself, but you've touched on, I think, my biggest nerve with everything that's happened in the aftermath of Thermal, is that you have an event. It was an exhibition. We knew it was an exhibition. We knew they were going to try some things.
Yeah, we knew.
And when the ticket price was announced at $2,000, and there would be limited amount of fans there, because they were going to limit it to, what, 2,000 tickets sold or something?
Right.
Fans were already mad. There was nothing that was going to change their mind. Even when the price was reduced to $500, which, when you think about what you got for that $500, is actually a pretty good deal. I think Kevin Lee was comparing, you know, at St. Pete, that same experience costs $1,500 for the weekend.
I mean, so free food and drink all weekend.
Yes.
I mean,
pit access, you know, garage access, like you're getting upfront access with drivers. You know, their drivers were waiting in line at like the food vendors.
The food
you can
trucks
just talk and hang out with the driver. It's a more laid back atmosphere. There's less pressure because it's not a points paying weekend. So that aspect alone, I think part of me thinks the biggest problem with this event had nothing to do with the event itself. It's that fans, once they saw that $2,000 price tag, were immediately turned off and nothing could redeem it. But if it were set at $500, yes, there'd still be complaints, especially when you have a largely Midwestern fan base. But again, when it includes food and drink and hospitality and pit access and, you know, access to homes and all those things, it's an incredible experience, and I would say the value of the $500 ticket was very much worth it.
I agree. I think it's a great point from you to say, as soon as the format for Thermal came out and the exclusivity of it initially, some people, I'm not saying everybody, had decided that they were just going to be against the entire event, and no matter what happened. And I think that carried through Sunday. There were plenty of problems on Sunday. We'll talk about them, but we also talk ad nauseum about a series that just refuses to try anything new. They try something. They didn't execute it well, but they tried something, and still people want to crap all over them. That's what we don't. And look, if you've listened to this podcast for any length of time, you know we are not shy about crapping on anything
or
anybody.
We are generally tough but fair.
Yes, and sometimes maybe overly tough. But for this, I mean, yes, there were some issues and this, that, and the other, and we'll talk about them. But we knew what we were getting at Thermal, and that's why I kind of have a problem with the teams kind of complaining behind the scenes. Like, you kind of knew what this was going to be. But well, let's break it all down. We'll get to it.
Yeah, and I guess the other aspect, so they tried something. It's an exhibition, so it's not a regular race weekend. And again, the fans who went, and people pointed this out, whether it's... What I find interesting to me is that on social media, the IndyCar social media sphere, and largely I'm paying attention to Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it these days. I can't speak for Facebook and other platforms, but it was largely all dumping on IndyCar and all negative.
Yes.
But what I find interesting is that in stories written of reporters on site asking fans their experience, and granted, it's not like there are a ton of fans there, so maybe that actually amplifies that.
Right.
But all positive things to say. I did see people who went and who posted about it on social media had positive things to say. In my interactions talking with you, with an IndyCar group chat of friends who we go to the 500 together every year, and with some friends and family, it was positive. So what I find interesting is when you talk to actual people, it was positive. But when it's right. people online, it's bashing and anger and hatred, and this was the worst thing IndyCar had ever done.
Yeah, or the comments and stories, right? Yeah,
yes.
It's always the worst. But you actually talk to human beings via text or phone, or for reporters to talk to them, it was a good event. Is it... People are saying, well, you know, does it even come back or whatever? I think it should come back. You need to make some changes, obviously, but I'm fine with racing in thermal. And there was one big reason why I liked thermal in terms of the racing, if you can change the format, and we'll get to it.
Yeah. So, I mean, one, congrats to Alex Blow for winning 500K, which he probably won't see any of that money between having a newborn and Zach Brown and his legal commitments.
Just
to
sign that over to whoever off. You owe.
Yeah. But congrats to him. It was a dominant weekend. Minor tweaks needed for the event? Yes. But I think this event should return. That doesn't mean it has to return at thermal, but it could return somewhere else. I have no problem with taking it elsewhere on the road. Again, it's never going to be a points-paying race if it's a true kind of all-star event, which is what IndyCar tried. And I'm glad they finally tried it, because I think we've been begging for them to try something like this for quite some time.
Right.
And I think the other aspect of it is, look, this event will return if thermal gets the value out of it. And for them, that means they sell one lot. This event's probably worth it.
This event's paid for. And that's what they're trying to do, is they have a whole hell of a lot of lots at thermal that still need to be sold and build multi-million dollar houses on. So,
and I understand fans kind of took, and it, Townsend Bell was he was a lot when it came to promoting thermal, but he likes the track.
Well, and it's his backyard, his own backyard, right? In California.
He lives in what, Malibu?
And he said he came out there what, the beginning of his racing career, or 20 years ago, and that's kind of, you know, he saw it from then to now. So I think there's a special place in Townsend's heart and mind for that place. It was a little much, but...
Well, he stores cars there, he mentioned, right, on the broadcast. I think the easiest tweak you make is that next year, if NBC still has the TV deal, which I do not expect them to have the TV deal, the way things are trending at the moment, and not because of anything NBC's done, it just seems like there's more momentum with Fox Sports. But I think the biggest thing is for this... unless you really tweak the format a lot, this should be a streaming only event.
Yeah.
And I think it was great. They had all the test time on Peacock, but I just think NBC made a mistake in putting it on NBC, especially going against the second round of the tournament. In that competition, it was never going to get a good rating, and we'll get to that later. That wasn't really the thing, but to me, reach your diehards by having this event on stream. It's not going to appeal to the masses, and that's okay. IndyCar is already a niche sport as it is.
It almost felt like, you know, you quote unquote wasted a network race on thermal a little
bit.
Yeah,
and
right?
This isn't anything different from what we said when the TV schedule came out.
Yeah.
It was like, could this be on Peacock only? Like, that would be preferred to put another race on network.
At the very least, USA instead of NBC.
So that's like the first thing to change in my mind. As far as... I don't even know how we do like a three things.
Well, do we
this.
Just want to do three takes out of the entire weekend?
Yeah. So I guess that's my first take is next year, put this on cable or put it on a streaming only platform. It didn't feel like a good use of network time.
Yeah. Well, I think too, my number one is the format obviously needs changed. The first 10 laps of the main, quote unquote, main was embarrassing because everybody was trying to conserve their tires. We mentioned it last week. It's like, if you have a 20 lap sprint at the end or the end as the main, make everybody have to do a mandatory pit stop and change tires and open it up. Like it's just 20 laps straight through, and you pit whenever you want. If you don't pit until lap 18, cause you're waiting for a caution and it doesn't come out, then that's on you. Kind of thing. Make that unpredictability. And then two, you just got to change a little bit of format. I don't think the halftime break made sense at all.
Yeah, I think you swap out the halftime break. You add a live pit stop, drivers at their choice. I think you do what you do at other tracks, other road and street courses, where you have you got to run at least two laps on the Wiuli
tire.
Yeah,
I think so. I think maybe make it 20, the main 25 laps. Everybody has to do one at least one pit stop, and you have to run both tires, both kind of tires. Boom.
Yeah, I think that's the change to the main that I would like. And then in terms of other tweaks for this event, in terms of how, you know, the racing component, like the heats, I enjoy the heats. You knew there'd be chaos. Push to pass was active from the start, and you knew that would be
which I don't think is
chaotic.
A great idea. I don't think you should have
you don't,
push
you,
to pass
you
right
do not
away.
Need that.
The cars are too close together
on race to weekends. That. But for this, I was fine with it. It created some drama. I would like to see maybe like an LCQ, which if you know motocross, supercross, that kind of thing,
yeah,
is very common. Or it's called a last chance qualifier or LCQ, where people don't advance, get one last chance, one last heat. So you could do that. And instead of having 12 in the finale, maybe you do 15 or something. I don't right. know. So an LCQ would add that little bit of intrigue as well for me.
I think the biggest, and this can be my number one, I think the biggest thing in terms of you change the format of the main, and you also have to infuse it with a hell of a lot more money. Because you saw, I think the biggest, most upsetting thing to teams and drivers was, what are we even doing here? Because the winner is going to get, it's not $1 million, $500,000, and it's going to be, you know, evenly thrown around the team. You know, I read about Felix Rosenquist. That was basically divvied out his second place money to everybody on the team and stuff like that. So, which is nice, but is it worth putting your car at risk and having to incur hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of damage to fix? Probably not. So if you can find somebody, a sponsor, a major sponsor, to infuse that purse, a couple million dollars, that could help. So again, it wasn't a horrible event. It was an event in need of some significant changes. And if IndyCar makes those, then I think it could have a year or two, maybe not even at Thermal, but somewhere else. But it wasn't a complete crap show like some people are wanting to make it sound like.
Yeah, no, I never felt like it was bad. And I get that the format was hokey. You have essentially a halftime stage break.
Yeah, it was.
But look, they're trying things. And yes, is it concerning that the format wasn't really finalized until a week out of the race? I guess.
Yeah.
But things are ever changing for a track that this is the first real major event they've ever put on. So there's a lot that goes into that. There are a lot of questions. And IndyCar, I think, did the best that they could. Did Thermal hold up their end of the bargain? I don't know. Maybe that's a greater question on it. But some minor tweaks here and there, I think that helps. And, you know, do you do an inverted heat? Something like that, like based on practice times. And then you get into the issue of sandbagging. You know, is that something that happens? But
right. Which, yes, it will, because that's just what drivers
are. That's that's what they do. So, yes. But I thought Herta laying back. Look, you knew the first 10 laps of the main didn't matter anyway, right? So Herta laying back and then other drivers following suit, I think that was a fascinating thing to watch. Yes, it didn't make the first 10 laps entertaining, but in my mind, it just built the anticipation for the final 10 laps.
Right.
So it didn't bother me all that much.
Yeah. Your number two?
My number two, yes. I want to talk about Ray Hall Letterman Lanigan Racing.
Uh-huh.
It was a very topsy-turvy weekend. There was so much good.
How do you not?
And yet so much bad.
How do you not make sure there's enough fuel on a car?
Right? So you have the positives. They were the only team to get all their cars advancing to the All-Star Race, the main event. That was the good. In fact, Graham Rahal, after struggles in qualifying, you know, raced his way through the field in his heat, did a good job. So you go from everyone being in the finale, and Linus Lundqvist, who had fast lap times all weekend, it felt like he had a chance to potentially win the thing at stages, and then didn't really have the pace in qualifying when it mattered. But Christian Lundgaard, my apologies. Christian Lundgaard had a lot of pace, but you have the issue on his side pod from the first heat, the damage that for whatever reason they weren't able to repair. But Colton Herta was able to replace a front wing at the stage break. So take that for what it's worth. Graham Ray Holland has stuck the throttle. He started fifth. You thought he could maybe be in line for a podium, possibly. And then Pietro Fittipaldi, who, it was a great story that he advanced out of his heat. It's pretty bad that he was disqualified because they didn't give him enough fuel.
I just don't understand how that happens.
And these things happen from time to time, like you think about it on races, but for this, for 10 laps, I guess that's why it's extra, it feels extra bad.
Yeah, it very much does. And for a team that, even when things go well, which they did largely at Thermal, that team finds a way to muck it up somehow. And it was a mistake. It was a bad mistake, an embarrassing mistake. You just can't do that stuff. And unfortunately, sometimes it's the same teams you look at that continue to screw up. And you can't screw up if you think you're going to run up front, mainly with Ganassi and Penske. Those two teams in particular rarely screw up. And it happens for sure, but those things aren't happening at those two teams.
But I guess the biggest takeaway for me is all three cars found speed. We knew they were good on road courses in particular, second half of last season. So it seems like that could continue. Obviously, street course pace is going to be a question mark, but I think this is a spot where getting all three cars, I still think, overshadows the negative that you had where the main event didn't go well. The problem is they all finished outside the top five.
Yeah. None of them got big money. All of them had to take $23,000. Hopefully, it's at least the Ray Hall Letterman Lanigan takes the positives out of Thermal Weekend and takes that into Long Beach, but we'll see.
What's your number two?
Let's talk about Thermal as a track, because I don't think enough people are talking about this. They want to talk about the event format and how this was wrong and that was wrong. But Thermal was fascinating because that track is unique in the sense that it is constantly changing. The wind, the sand, all of that dictates changes at that course all the time.
And even the weather, I mean, temperatures were changing throughout the weekend. You had hotter temperatures early in the weekend, cooler temperatures later in the weekend. It also helped that they raced at 9:30 Pacific time, so local time out there. So that changes it. But yes, I mean, it was a constantly changing track, and you had tire wear as a factor, which it was not at St. Pete.
I mean, and all that practice time they had, and you still had drivers that had no clue what setup they needed to go for the heats in the main because of the constant changing conditions at Thermal. The only other racetrack that's that sensitive is Indianapolis on the schedule. Everything else is, if you got it dialed in, usually at Mid-Ohio on Friday, it's going to be fast on Saturday. It's going to be fine on Sunday. But even from practice to practice on the same day at Thermal, it was guys going out there, even in qualifying, saying, well, all of a sudden it came to me in qualifying, it hasn't been there all year or all weekend or vice versa. And I thought it was a very unique event in the sense that no driver, no team, partly it's because of the limited runtime there and they've never had a race. But two, you saw the sand being blown around. You saw the wind with the palm trees swaying and stuff like that. And it was just a very difficult track to figure out for the teams. And that bodes well for entertainment purposes.
Yeah, I think that helped the racing. I mean, think how much testing time they had.
And
for
still
the
couldn't figure it out.
Yeah.
Really.
I mean, you had multiple multi-hour test sessions. Qualifying, which I thought was very entertaining because the drivers asked for a change, shifting the time to 8-minute sessions, active push to pass, you go right away. And it was basically, on primary tires, which they didn't have the alternates, right, over the course of the weekend. On primary tires, you had one, maybe two laps. And I think qualifying was outstanding.
I agree, especially because guys knew if they could start up front in the heat, they could just coast their way around and make it to the main.
So that's your number two. I guess it's time for
number three
on this. And I guess ultimately it comes down to, well, the best driver in the series dominated this event. I guess we shouldn't have been surprised. We went.
But you picked him, correct?
I think so. Because here's the thing. We went into this event thinking some drivers aren't going to take risks because it's not enough of an incentive for them. Well, Scott Dixon punted Romain Grosjean.
Three, let me tell you that.
Will Power, you didn't think was going to, do anything. Newgarden as well. But guys who are still winning races but are hungry, your Alex Blows, your Scott McLaughlin, Felix Rosenquist, and that team, right? they've had great pace this year. They still delivered. And yes, it wasn't competitive in the fact that it wasn't close. But Alex Palou, I mean, we've seen this for him on natural terrain road courses time and again, that he just pulls away from the field.
Yeah, he does.
I think he's that good at those type of tracks, and it shows. I think that's just what we saw on Sunday. So it was a dominant performance from him. Obviously, the payday's nice in the future. Hopefully, it's a true $1 million to the winner. It'd be nice if that other part of the member played out again. Unless they sell a lot or there's some corporate deals that went down for IndyCar, I'd be surprised if it comes back. But I'm just so glad they took the risk.
No, I agree. It's better than not taking the risk at all. And I think when you look at what could be learned, at least for the next All-Star event, whether it's at Thermal or otherwise, hopefully they take the lessons learned. They know what they need to do and what not to do to try to improve upon this event wherever it is.
So Alex Palou dominant and nothing's changed. But hey, no points were earned. So I guess we can relax a little bit.
Yeah, relax a little bit. So
what's your number three?
Well, let's talk Scott Dixon. And immediately after the punting of Romain Grosjean, which was kind of perversely funny a little bit.
It's gone the other way in the past, right?
Well, that's my thing. Like, why is he so mad when he does it to people all the time?
Yeah. Well, I remember Dixon and Pato at Long Beach, right?
Yeah.
Last year.
Yeah. So, but this is my thing with Scott Dixon. And I am not saying that he is not one of the greatest IndyCar drivers ever. Okay, a generational talent, all the accolades. But he's starting to show similar signs to what Jimmy Johnson did late in his full-time NASCAR career, where it was obvious that Jimmy Johnson wasn't the Jimmy Johnson that won, what, 6 championships in NASCAR? He was making mistakes that he otherwise didn't.
7.
7. He's made mistakes that he usually didn't. Just losing that edge. And it came with age. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. And I just look at the incident we saw on lap one of Heat 1 as just a sign to me that would the Scott Dixon of 5, 6, 7 years ago have made that error? And I feel like the answer is no.
No.
And that's not, again, not taking anything away from Scott Dixon. I'm just saying, I feel like we're seeing more mistakes by Dixon on track than we've seen previously in his career because of him getting old. And it happens to everybody. And people say, well, you know, these guys can race longer than ever because they stay in such good shape. But the mind is different. You cannot exercise the mind as well as you can the body. And I think reflexes are affected. I think your intuition is affected. And I'm not dogging on Scott Dixon whatsoever. I think we're seeing more of these cases where, oh, who just bumped that? And when you hear Scott Dixon, you're like, what?
Well, when the incident initially happened, we immediately thought, oh, there's Grosjean being Grosjean.
Yeah, that was Grosjean
that
taking
could
out.
Could not be further from the truth.
He was a victim this time. And then you think, okay, who in the back ran into it? Was it Nolan Siegel or somebody that you know, a guy? No, it was Scott Dixon that mistimed the braking zone and caused the chaos. And I feel like we're seeing that a little bit more with Scott Dixon, and it comes with age, and it's not dogging him whatsoever. It's just, it happens with age. And that really was telling to me because we saw the very same thing with Jimmy Johnson at the tail end of his full-time Cup career.
Well, you look at Dixon and Ganassi, he's still, you know, got speed at Indy. He's still winning races for you, even though last year it took a lot longer than we anticipated. Then he went on a tear and won several late in the season. But you had, what, Long Beach with Pato. You had practice at Road America with Will Power. You have this incident. And again, he's still one of the best IndyCar drivers ever.
Yes.
But Alex Palou, it's his team now, Chip Ganassi Racing.
Yeah, very much is.
And by him coming back, it cemented that. I mean, it was already his team last year, him leaving briefly, you know, change that, but him staying with the team, it's his team. It's still a 1A and 1B. I'm not ready to really separate them further than that. But yes, these things happen. And, you know, Dixon's going to be a guy who could run the Indy 500 for another 5+ years, probably.
Oh, sure. And I think the dominance that Alex Palou displayed last year kind of overshadowed Scott Dixon, who never finished outside of 7th except one race last year, which I don't think people realized. Other than Long Beach, he didn't finish worse than seventh.
Which normally wins you a championship.
Which normally wins you a championship. But his teammate was better. And he won three of the final four races of the season. So I'm not saying like Scott Dixon is washed up or anything like that. But at 43 years old, me at 41, I am not as intuitive as I was 10 years ago. And I'm just saying, I think you're seeing mistakes that Scott Dixon never used to make. That's all I'm saying. And at 43, I think we're in the last year or two of Scott Dixon being a full-time IndyCar driver. And I've said this before. I think when Scott Dixon's done, he's done. I don't know if he's a Indy 500 only driver. Maybe 1 year after he retires or something like that. Special situation, but I don't see Scott Dixon carrying on with single races. I think when he's done, he's done. And quite frankly, I wouldn't, if I had to bet right now, I would say 2025 is Scott Dixon's final season.
I could very well see that. And when you talk about Dixon and him not being an Indy only guy, like unless Chip Ganassi is going to offer that seat, I don't think he's going
to, right. It has to be a Ganassi seat.
Come back, with different teams. And I just don't think that's in his nature, and that's fine. Also, he's not chasing something at Indy, right? He has the Indy 500 win. Yes, of course he'd like another.
Yes.
He's come close so many times. It's shocking that he only has one Indy 500 win in what, six championships? So
yeah, but I don't think it like sticks in his craw that he only has one.
No, I mean, yes, you think about the ones that got away, but I don't think that's going to be the motivation of him to come back with less than rides in terms of truly competitive rides to win Indy in a one-off situation.
I mean, he turns 44 in July. I just have a hard time looking at a 46-year-old Scott Dixon in the seat in 2026. It's hard for me. I mean, I wouldn't even be shocked if he calls it quits at the end of this year. I think maybe he would announce it or get in front of it for next year and go through the season, even though I don't know if he's really like a spotlight guy that wants to go on a retirement tour. But I truly believe that this is either this year or next year is Scott Dixon's last in IndyCar.
How much does it help IndyCar? This is kind of a side conversation, but with Will Power, with Scott Dixon, Tony Kanaan's retired now, with
Elio,
who still is going to run Indy for a couple more years, as long as he has the opportunity to go for five. How much does it help that IndyCar's feels like they've transitioned better out of that star era than, say, they did in the 90s. And granted, there are a lot of other factors that we don't need to get into with IndyCar in the 90s and transitioning from retiring stars like Foyt and Unser and Mears and Andretti and so on and so forth. But, I mean, you have your kind of younger guns like your Herta, your Pato. You have Newgarden, who's probably the best driver in the series, along with Pillow. They're 1A and 1B in any order. Scott McLaughlin, who brings a lot of talent to the table, is probably a future champion
right
down the line. Like, in a way, IndyCar's in a good spot because those big names that carried IndyCar for so long, I mean, yeah, they're still going to be running the next couple years, but I don't think there's going to be that massive drop-off because they've actually done a good job with developing the new stars.
I totally agree. I think when you look at some of the younger guys, when you look at Christian Lundgaard and I mean, Felix, it's only been a couple races, but what he's done with Meyer Shank earlier the first two races has been phenomenal. I mean, you feel like Rinus VK, if he can get in the right situation, can truly break out. You look, obviously, Alex Pillow. You look at Linus Lundqvist, what he did up in the ladder and coming up and finally get his opportunity with Ganassi this year. How about Callum Ilott, you know, and just the two races filling in for Malukas, you feel like he is going to find a full-time seat somewhere and potentially be a star. It doesn't include Pato. It doesn't include Colton Herta. You got Kyle Kirkwood. You got Marcus Ericsson, and that doesn't mention Newgarden. You know, I totally agree. Maybe 2-3 years ago, you go, my gosh, these guys got to hold on because who's next? But I think we've already arrived there.
Yeah, I think you have the transitional guys that are essentially right now in Newgarden, and I guess I'd throw in McLaughlin, even though he's, you know, newer to the series, but he's more experienced as a race car driver. And then obviously Pillow is kind of the current crop that we know will be for sure contending for titles. You have Pato, you have Colton, you have Erickson has been the series for a while. Like, it's just, it's a good group, and I think they actually have a fallback, whereas previously they really did not.
Well, especially Ganassi. How long did we question that team when saying who's going to be the guy that steps up and fills the void of Scott Dixon when he leaves? Because there was a couple of years there where you're like, who's going to be next? Who's going to replace Scott Dixon as the alpha on this team? We know it's Alex Pillow now. He's already the alpha, and maybe that helps Scott Dixon step aside a little bit sooner, or at least maybe Chip Ganassi not be against him walking away in the next year or two, knowing that you have Alex Pillow as your new alpha. So I think that's a definite talking point and a definite thing is you look at this, and for a while Ganassi, like, man, who's going to be the next guy here? And they had trouble finding that. And it seems like they're in a good spot now. And I think that's going to put Scott Dixon in a more comfortable position when he says, hey, I'm done.
I mean, Pato O'Ward is probably the most popular driver in the series.
Yeah, I mean, especially when you factor in Central America and all that. So, for sure.
So, I think there are a lot of good things to take away. All right, let's get to some notes on thermal and wrap things up. So, look, we weren't bash IndyCar, bash thermal. Everything's awful. Everything sucked. Sorry if that's what you wanted to hear on this episode. We surprise ourselves sometimes.
Sometimes you do.
And we're probably surprising you as you're listening to this.
Especially when, like, we were typing, going back and forth, and we're like, I kind of like the track. And then you'd open social media, and it was just like the worst thing in IndyCar history. And we're like, maybe, are we the weird ones? But it's like,
But again, we came with it from the mindset from the very beginning.
Maybe
and
we just
you
didn't
said
expect
this.
Much.
Well, no, I don't think that's what it was. You said this from the very beginning. This event is not for the fans. It's an exhibition event, and we were okay with IndyCar taking this risk, knowing that it could lead to potential team ownership, which we'll touch on that in a second. It could lead to more sponsors for the series. This was all about the B2B, the business-to-business deals.
Yes.
And also, Thermal saw as an opportunity, we can showcase our facility, which looks to be very impressive. It's an incredible backdrop with the mountains and the desert and the palm trees and everything, right? And so they're trying to sell lots. So they need this opportunity. They're willing to shell out the money for essentially an infomercial. And yes, that is what it felt like at times on the broadcast. I can't deny that. But all in all, both sides use it to their benefit. Now, who benefits more? Is it IndyCar or Thermal? That's the thing that remains to be seen.
Yeah, TBD for those.
Now,
for sure.
What did not benefit was NBC by running this race. The TV rating, predictably, on a Sunday afternoon competing against March Madness, was not good. You had 816,000 viewers, just bad. Anytime you go below a million, it's bad. This is IndyCar's lowest network TV rating without an NFL conflict since the 22 race two at Iowa. That from Nathan Brown, the Indy Star. It was against a men's March Madness game and some women's games. Obviously,
just not a good combination.
Good. No. And it's, that's why, again, I felt like it was weird for this race to be right on NBC.
Yeah, I definitely agree. So you're already behind the eight ball coming out of the gate. You've had two ratings under a million on network, which is not ideal. And when you look at it and you say you have more races this year on USA and Peacock, it doesn't bode well. It's already shaping up that you're going to need a significantly better Indy 500 rating to have any chance at saying the ratings were up in 2024.
The key is going to be Barber, the Indy GP, and the Indy 500, all three races on NBC. That's going to be, I think, the key stretch to really potentially turn things around. Or, you know, Iowa weekend. Is that the other, look, IndyCar has network primetime races. You don't get that. And, no. And they have that with Iowa. 8:00, July 13th, race one, Saturday night. That's a big get. So
what do you think? Could they get could they get a 1.5 million?
Not for that. No,
not in prime time.
Not on a Saturday night in the summer. No,
that's true.
That's a problem, but
I could say 1.2 they could get. I think
Mid Ohio could do well. July 7th. I mean,
the problem is the races that IndyCar fans love to say people want to watch or go to and nobody goes, the ovals, the majority of them in the latter half of the season are not on network.
Yes. I mean, you at least have the Iowa doubleheader on network. You have Milwaukee, which you have race one on Peacock, race two on USA, and then the season finale, which is going to go up against the NFL, of course, on NBC. So we'll see. But yeah, the TV ratings not been good.
That's not off to a
I
good
guess
start.
That's the massive downer of this event. A lot of interesting notes from Marshall Pruitt's cool down lap on racer.com talking about this event. I mean, obviously Colton Herta and Alexander Rossi in the finale were the thrill. They tried something. I have no problem with what Herta and that team did to make, they made this event interesting, right? But there wasn't like a whole lot. I mean, you had one of the heats, I think it was like no passes for position. Was
yeah,
that heat two?
Is,
right. So
yeah, it was,
but look,
processional.
As we talked about, Pruitt saying, I spoke with quite a few fans who bought the $500 tickets to spend 3 days at Thermal, and I didn't hear a single complaint about the cost, amenities, or any other aspect of the event. And he said he chatted with, you know, a dozen or so. So that's a positive. The all-inclusive food and drinks, obviously a huge hit as well at the price point.
Do they get to stay? Does that include accommodations, the
$500? No, okay. No. So that's,
still,
that's
it's pretty
still though,
nice. Yeah.
With all the access you get.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I think the original cost of $2,000 is what torpedoed the event even before it
sure.
started. And I think that's
if you want
the problem.
If you want to criticize IndyCar, you can say, once again, not really understanding their audience of how many people did they really think were going to pay $2,000 to go to that event.
Also, Honda, they showed well in this event.
After so many people just wanted to write them off after
yeah.
race one.
But Honda had, what, five of the top six, the lone Chevy Scott McLaughlin in second. So that was a good performance by them. Yeah, the podium could use some work, as Pruitt pointed out. And then
like a middle school wrestling podium.
Yeah. Yeah. And some interesting notes at the end. That's how, where all the good stuff is. So there's a silly season piece on Joseph Newgarden. We'll get to more on that, in news and notes. Marcus Ericsson's salary. He estimated it at $3 million. Apparently, it's $4 million, which is nuts.
Man, crazy money being thrown around right now in IndyCar.
But again, he's a top driver, and drivers are finally getting paid. There was an incident with a team and security. He didn't reveal the team, but there's some sort of misunderstanding, and I'm really curious what happened there.
Getting taken down to the ground.
Yeah. several cars with blank side pods. I think they're using it as a way to look, you could sell or you could buy a sponsorship for this car. I think that's kind of the point of that. And then the very end, an IndyCar official told Pruitt, the series had a number of Thermal members express an interest in team ownership. Again, no way to know how many people and, you know, what's the follow-up. Is that a passing conversation or is
right.
that,
and it's an IndyCar official mentioning
yeah.
that. So what's
so,
the bias?
Who knows, but hey, you take it, right? And I guess that kind of wraps up the conversation on Thermal. And I, again, if you agree or disagree, and I'm sure a lot of you disagree, we want to hear from you. The ways you can interact with us, as always, newtrackrecordpodcast.com. While you're there, sign up for the email list. It is free. You'll get alerts, emails for new episodes, and also any special announcements we have. We also have the store, t-shirts, and stickers for sale on there. On social media, IndyCar Podcast on Instagram, on Twitter/X, on Facebook, search for New Track Record. You can always email us, newtrackrecordpodcast@gmail.com. Support us via Patreon, patreon.com/newtrackrecord. Thanks to Xavier and others for their generous support. Again, starting at just $1 per month for you to support us on there. And as always, you can download and listen to the podcast on your favorite podcasting platform. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Pocket Cast, Overcast, CastBox, Player FM, wherever you listen to podcasts, download and listen in for free. All right, mailbag time. And of course, there's a ton, and I mean a ton, of thoughts on this event, on how people feel about it. I guess the number one thing for me, I don't even know how to rate the race because we have two heats. We have a
what
main event
race. Yeah.
Like I want to cop out and say incomplete, but if I'm going to give the weekend a rating, I guess I'd go a 7.
I would go a little bit lower. I'd probably say a 6. I think it left. I guess our expectations were relatively low while other people for some reason had high expectations for this. I think the racing really brought it down for me, especially that first part of the main. You just can't, you don't want to have a quote unquote all-star race and have half of it where people are just putzing around trying to conserve tires. I get the strategy, but in such a short race, you shouldn't have that come into play. And that's why you need to adjust some things. So I'll have to give it a 6 for the weekend.
All right. That's fair. I thought it was a intriguing event and they tried something new, and that's the biggest thing for me.
I totally get it.
We'll get to rate the race. And again, there's a ton of entries, so I don't even know how to kind of tighten this up. So Hollywood, Tony said an 8 for the beginning of the first heat, then a 2 for the finish of the race. Overall rating of 5, just average. Not a lot of passing at the front of the field. Alex Kane, 33. 1, create a format where the fans and TV get to see the drivers have to use their skills. Crews get to shine during green flag pit stops. Strategy using different tire compounds and make the fast cars drive through the field to get back up front. Yeah, all things we talked about. Beans B Card blog. If 5 is average, I give this a 2. I was happy to have all the content to consume over the 3 days. We don't get enough IndyCar, but the racing itself was, well, was it even racing? Because underscore race gave it a 2. Poet Shevchenko. Rossi was a highlight with Herta. Also, in moments from the other drivers throughout the heat races, I like that IndyCar tried something new this weekend. I think it exposed endemic problems with the series on road and street courses, namely. Yeah, there are issues. And tire wear is going to be an issue all season until the hybrids come back into play. Jeremy from HBG said, no points, no rating, but a bunch of rich people paid a ton of cash so IndyCar fans could watch what was basically a 3-day test, better than the long gap in the schedule we would have had. That's ultimately my takeaway. Is that
we had cars on track.
K-San 5001 gave it a negative 10. Daniel SCM 2004 gave it a 6. Jamin T14 gave it a 5. We tried something new and that's good. Track looked good on TV. I enjoy the format. Needed more prize money with more paying spots. That would have maybe upped the drama a bit. Yeah, top 10 should have been
some extra money.
And the lowest amount being what, like 50K? So yeah, that the teams can at least break even.
Right. Yeah, definitely.
P. Dudley, 64, gave it a 2. Very little passing. For once, the F1 GP run on the same weekend was better. Well, but IndyCar essentially did 3 sprint races, so it's kind of hard to compare.
Yes.
Nichardson Roa gave it a negative 5. I am analog. 2 for the race, 6 for doing something different. 7 for Felix and Marcus having good showings. Sig Domer gave it a 7. Skyscraper Tree 1. I never thought I'd see the day where a 10-lap race started and some were saving fuel and some were saving tires. Ed Joris gave it a 4. The Fans Place gave it a 2. Felt like instead of leaning into the things that make IndyCar awesome, accessibility, mostly level racing field on-track action, IndyCar tried to recreate an F1 style experience. On the flip side, I can't remember the last time there was this much of a spotlight on IndyCar this early in the season. For next year, build on that and add the elements that make IndyCar so fun.
Fair.
Very fair. CJ9 said, since I can't make it a negative 10, so it'd be 1. Honestly, I had some potential, but poor, lazy execution. They do this again, maybe have reverse grids, LCQ, inner ballast like they do in British touring cars. Races like this can be an opportunity to bring in new fans. This wasn't it. Howard 2112 gave it a 4. Gerb War gave it a 1.5, absolutely no atmosphere, which we knew that would be the case.
Yeah.
And then Mr. Moped 1979 said, I don't know. I didn't know it was on. so, yeah, that. If you don't know what's on, that's fine. But they're hating on the event in general. Ultimately, they tried something, and that's all you can ask for.
Well, now two things. Does IndyCar learn from this event and adjust what it does in the future? And two, does it lead to some long-standing investment in the series, whether it's a team owner, a existing team that brings on a wealthy financier type thing? Is it somebody that becomes a major sponsor of a team or the series? If any of those things come to fruition, then yes, it was worth it. And those things remain to be seen.
Poet Shevchenko, I actually didn't get to all his thoughts. Talking about, you know, the endemic problems with the series on road and street courses, namely that one or two cars can always get out front and control the race. We saw that with Plow. It's not a fuel saving thing because there's no refueling, not tires because Herta on his charge couldn't really get close. Any problems people had with this race are the same problems they have on regular races. as far as the rating, because IndyCar took a risk, shook things up, and managed to have some entertaining moments for the highlights reel. I'll give it an 8 for effort.
No, you could do, because, you know, it's so tough to pass, is what you could do is you could
unlimited push to pass.
Well, no, I was going to say, if you're within 1 second on particular parts of the track, what you could do is open up the rear wing and get some extra horsepower and be able to pass.
Yeah.
I think they have that in other series that people frown upon.
Perhaps. I've heard of it. Maybe seen it before elsewhere. Not entirely sure.
I think it's called DRS.
Driver reduction system.
Is it a DRS? Yes, driver
reduction.
No,
drag.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Drag reduction.
Because it takes the driver out of the element. Yes, that's why I called it that.
So DRS for drag reduction system. No, tongue in cheek. I don't really want to see that in IndyCar, but they have to do something to make it easier to pass.
Yeah. Someone else, Unlimited Slip DF, gave Thermal a 2 out of 10, and 1 is achieved the instant the first drop of ethanol is ignited at the event. Again, I don't know.
It's tough for me to be that hostile toward the event.
Yeah.
I get people's beef. I just don't know. I don't know.
We also didn't talk about the sideburns on the Firestone tire guy. That was a highlight. And the cheese grater as well.
Uh-huh.
So we missed,
yeah, we missed some
that highlights. Aspect, the highlight of the weekend. Let's see. Several other tweets. And a lot of this is now getting into the latest news. And this from Jeff Zerneski, another thought on Thermal. And then we'll basically wrap Thermal up. I think the event could be saved if some adjustments were made, change the tire rules where racing is promoted in the first segment, drop the last 3 cars after segment 1, pay a large bonus for each lap led, like $10,000, reduce overall purse to account for lap leader bonus. Look, again, tweaks are fine. I think this wasn't like a doomsday thing like a lot of people were projecting it to be on social media.
Yeah, I definitely agree. It wasn't as bad as what people are saying it was.
But again, the loudest people get amplified on social media, so you always have to keep that in mind.
Definitely.
And that's ultimately my biggest takeaway. Now, another aspect, and we'll talk more about this in news and notes, but Long Beach was apparently up for sale, then now Jerry Forsyth is buying the rest. The crisis averted. There are a few interesting comments on this that we'll get to, but some replies on socials. This from Hunter's Way 67 said, "Thank God, I was very worried, as it seems whatever NASCAR wants, they get. Still, the city could drop the Grand Prix of Long Beach at some point and give the race to whomever they see fit. For now, we can relax." I mean, I don't think they're going to change anything. Sig Domer said, "I cannot like this enough. Skyscraper Tree won, and Penske still didn't step up and write a check." I mean,
oh, he didn't have to.
But here's the thing. You wouldn't have controlling interest of the event. So whether it's NASCAR, Penske Entertainment, which they obviously inquired about it, or Liberty Media, you still wouldn't have 100% control of the event. So what does it really gain?
This was basically a panic for 24 hours.
Yes.
And there are some comments out there that there didn't need to be panic.
Yes. So
because everybody within, I guess, knew where the direction it was going with Forsyth.
And one other final mailbag comment. This from Beans B-Card blog. "I'm interested to hear a new track record tomorrow." Well, so that means they'll probably listen on Friday. Track side was about 97% positive about Thermal, telling us why it was so great. That's not how the fans in all caps, feel. I believe NTR will keep it real and become my IndyCar radio show / podcast of choice.
Hopefully we didn't disappoint you.
Sorry to disappoint you.
I don't think we were 97% positive.
No, I think we kept it real without mudslinging.
Yes.
Don't think there was that much mud to sling.
I think we were fair. I think I'm not saying that people that were more harsh are necessarily wrong. I didn't feel like I had to go there. Yeah. I'm just not there. If they come back, let's say hypothetically IndyCar comes back next year and doesn't change a thing, then yeah, we will rail all over it. They need to learn the lessons from Thermal. And that's my big thing going forward. Did you learn? Are you going to adjust going forward? Are you going to try to do an all-star race somewhere else or Thermal and make the proper adjustments or not? And did you learn lessons? And maybe did you gain a couple really wealthy people that are going to invest in your series in some sort. If those two things happen, heck, even only one of those things happens, then it was a worthy event, I guess. Nobody got hurt. Nobody lost mega money.
Well, except for Junkos and Ray Haw damage.
No,
and,
but I'm saying like in terms of like nobody ruined a car. I mean, yeah, well, body damage. Junkos
did.
Well, no, I'm saying like there was no tubs. You didn't lose a tub or anything like that. Yeah. You know, I mean, like, yeah, you have some damage, but you could also have crashed at a test. So I don't know. It's tough for me to completely crap all over the event. I think we were fair, and I'm sure some people will listen to the podcast and say we weren't harsh enough, but I think surely there's some times where we're too harsh on certain things. So it evens out here.
All right. And like NOLA 2015, we'll move on and maybe never have to talk about this event ever again.
Probably.
So let's get to news and notes. And of course, the highlight is we just talked about it, Long Beach and where things stand in the future. So after Marshall Pruitt of Racer.com put out a story, it basically said half of Long Beach is for sale and NASCAR's angling to buy half from Kevin Kalkoven's estate after he passed in 2022. Penske Entertainment tried to rebuff those advances. Well, it doesn't matter because Gerald Forsyth, a.k.a. Jerry Forsyth, who already owned half the event, just purchased...
Bought the other half.
The other half. And he said, the estate has agreed to sell its 50% to me. He said, if any series has its sights on Long Beach, please tell them to look elsewhere. This is an IndyCar event, and it will be into the future. Yes, the same Jerry Forsyth, who at one point owned Champ Car, along with Kevin Kalkoven, the same Gerald Forsyth, who did not go into the merged IndyCar series in 2008, keeping Paul Tracy from a full-time ride. This same guy is, yeah.
Effectively the savior of the event.
This is an IndyCar event. And again, the problem was never with IndyCar. It was with Tony George.
It's cool to see because Jerry Forsyth could have very easily, at that time, with reunification, simply turned his back on open-wheel racing in the United States and said, I'm done. I'm taking my millions and I'm not going to be involved in this sport in one way, shape or form ever again. And instead he has the control. He had the controlling stake and now the entirety of the stake in the second biggest event on the IndyCar calendar. And he could have very easily turned his back and said, you know what? Not only will that is that 50% up, I'll sell my 50%, whatever. Formula One will pay a crap ton of money for it. NASCAR will pay a crap ton of money for it. But no, instead, he protects the event. He even said, I probably overpaid for the 50%, but this is an IndyCar event. It will stay an IndyCar event. And Formula One, Cup, whoever, you can look elsewhere to try to find a premier road course event in this part of the country.
And he mentioned about overpaying. He said, and I know a lot of people have looked at it because he'd come to me, that being Pierre Wildman, who's Kalkoven's right-hand man responsible for the estate. You come to me and say, so-and-so would like to take a look. I think there's probably four or five, but the financials didn't justify the number that they were asking for it. And quite frankly, I've overpaid for it. But again, who's going to buy 50% because you can't control anything? And I think that may be the reasons that some people have walked away. And ultimately, that's what happened.
Well, I think I'm sure a couple interested parties came in and said, okay, what if we buy 100% of the event? Jerry, were you willing to invest? You don't have any... team or whatever in this series, what do you care? But the event means a lot to Jerry Forsyth, and he knows how much it means to IndyCar, and it's just great to have somebody in that situation and position to make sure the event isn't going anywhere off the IndyCar schedule.
And why would he want to get rid of that when the event next year is celebrating its 50th year? That's kind of a big deal.
Yes, absolutely. Which is what, coming up next year?
Yeah, next year.
Can't wait.
Yeah. So it's an event I would love to get to someday. It looks really, really cool. And it truly is the crown jewel of street races and not just in the U.S., but I think you could make the argument it is one of the crown jewel of street races worldwide.
Absolutely. Especially outside. I mean, what would you put? If you're ranking them, Monaco one. In terms of the entirety of the event and the pageantry and blah, blah, blah?
I mean, Monaco, I guess, because of the location, but I don't think they're as far apart as you. I mean, the racing at Monaco is horrendous. And yes, Long Beach doesn't have great racing all the time.
I'm talking about in terms of, I guess, in terms of clout, I have to put Monaco number one. Even though the racing sucks, everybody wants to race at Monaco. And that's kind of why I put Monaco number one. I mean, Long Beach at the very least is in your top three, right? And everybody's top three in terms of street races in the world.
I mean, you throw in, what, Bathurst maybe is the other one, or, I don't know, Isle of Man. I don't know. There are several options.
But yeah, in terms of street courses, is it Monaco and Long Beach in terms of the street course races?
Yeah.
Surfers?
For like supercars?
Right,
well, I would say Bathurst, I think, is probably more highly regarded.
But yeah, it's up there in the top three. And it was about 24 hours of panic, but it sounded like behind the scenes, there wasn't as much uncertainty as certain stories made it out to be.
Yes. And we'll save one of those for our tweets of the week.
Oh,
it's quite juicy on that topic. Other notes to get to, drivers were testing today, Thursday, March 28th. On the Indianapolis Motor Speedway road course, the other teams who hadn't tested the hybrid yet, well, they had their chance, and all in all, good news. Steve Wittich from Trackside Online pointing out that drivers working on restarting the engines themselves and have to rely on the IndyCar safety team. That's excellent. The team's testing it all. Graham Rahal, Romain Grosjean, Tom Blomqvist, Rinus Vicky, Jack Harvey, and Stingray Robb. I believe they'll reverse course, you know, and teammates will do it again tomorrow. This is a multi-day test. Also, speaking of testing, the IMS Open Test for the Indy 500, April 10th and 11th. That'll air on Peacock. And this update from Nathan Brown of the Indy Star, given crowding concerns around the ongoing construction of the IMS Museum, IMS plans to open limited grandstand seating for the two-day test.
Hey,
that
fun.
Is huge.
That's fun.
So that's exciting for a lot of people. Also, friend of the podcast, Chad Smith, Chad200, posted a video. There are new video boards around the road course turns 1 and 2 area for fans in the GA area, which is really cool.
That's nice.
On the inside of the track. So again, continue to enhance, and they're doing a great job with that. And now speaking
you mentioned real quick about now that the drivers can restart the cars in the cockpit. So I'm just
less red flags.
Well, yeah. And I'm already picturing too, like when you stall coming out of your pit, especially if it's 1 or 2 stalls down and they have to go get you and pull you back and then get the starter and all that stuff. Conceivably, that will mean that if you try to peel out, you stall, you can start it up again and keep going. And that will be tremendous. We won't have these dangerous situations on pit road where you have pit crew guys running down the pit lane trying to get their car and bring it back so they can restart it. So it'll be good in terms of the show and limit the red flags and yellow flags, but it'll also be great for safety.
Oh, without a doubt. I think that's a big positive moving forward. And one other note on IMS. So we have a new food vendor. So Aramark Sports and Entertainment, there's an article on the Indy Star talking about some of the options. And I hope it's better because I got like a chicken tender basket and it was small.
Like 2.5 tenders in it or something like that?
Yeah, it was and the tenders were tiny. So hopefully...
It was more nuggets than tenders.
Better, yeah. So, again, this is a change in their concessions. Hopefully, the food options are better. Pork tenderloins for $12.50. Chicken tender baskets, $12. Nachos, $6. Hot dogs, $6. That better be a big hot dog. obviously, beer, soda, all those things. But they have short rib Coney dogs. That sounds good.
Not a Coney dog. Oh, yeah, I have a Coney. I like Coney dogs. I was thinking corn dogs.
Burgers, of course, loaded tenderloin fries. And again, you can still bring your cooler, which is what most of us do.
That's clutch.
Anyway. It is great for that event. On silly season news, so I mentioned, and Marshall Pruitt posted this in the mailbag, that apparently things are frosty, right? Mm. With Joseph Newgarden and his teammates, which, well, I don't know. If you ditch your video series, which... I don't think was a big deal, but you couple it with him unfollowing everyone on social media. And then, throw in the fact that Joseph Newgarden is apparently met with Andretti officials over the winter, yeah, of course things are going to be frosty. He's a free agent after this season, and obviously he wants to get paid, but what team could he get paid at? I mean, I guess McLaren would be the option.
Well, what team can he get paid a lot of money at and still be as competitive as he is? And I think that's the biggest question. I have a hard time believing that as long as Roger Penske is in the ballpark with finances, with investment in salary to Joseph Newgarden, he won't go anywhere. If he tries to lowball him, then maybe he does. But Joseph Newgarden still wants to be able to compete for wins and championships. He's not going to take $3 million more to go race for a team like Andretti that can't compete right now, quite frankly, for either this point. McLaren, for that matter.
Andretti, so Ericsson is apparently $4 million. Herta, $7 million, which we talked about.
If Herta's getting paid $7 million, then...
But that's with the...
With the caveat of Formula One.
Correct.
I get it. But
that's
if
why.
We're looking at strict... Like, if he's making $7 million, then Newgarden would be like, well, I want to make $9 million. That's the problem, and that's kind of what writers have wrote about it. Like, it's a outlier, basically, is what Colton Herta is. You have to look at it as an outlier.
Oh, and Pato's getting, what, up to four and a half eventually on this contract extension?
And I don't know.
What do you think Newgarden's getting?
Right now?
1.2, 1.5?
I think he's making two.
Two? Okay.
Right now. And I think he should be making five. Is Roger Penske going to pay him five?
Probably not.
But if the highest offer then elsewhere is six... Is it important enough for Joseph Newgarden to compete for wins and titles to say, I'll take the five and stay at Penske? I don't know. That's kind of what I'm throwing out and see. I don't know.
It's nice that drivers are getting paid more again after wages outside of, you know, the Dixon and Franchitti's, who are making over $3 million a year,
right,
have been relatively low for quite some time. And there are still drivers who aren't making any money who are competing full time.
Yes.
And that's just the reality. But again, could Newgarden be approaching Andretti for, you know, more of an F1 opportunity? You know, all he needs is a test.
Yeah. I mean, McLaren would make more sense in that respect. McLaren's already in Formula One. So it's worked out for Palou and Pato O'Ward, who both have been in what, FP1s.
Mm-hmm.
So I've never heard that as being a desire for Joseph Newgarden. Now that he's won the Indianapolis 500, maybe it is something. I don't think he would want to compete in Formula One full time, but, you know, maybe get a test or an FP1, maybe something like that. Maybe. I don't know. I think it's going to be an interesting storyline to watch, because is Roger Penske going to pony up the money that it should? I mean, Joseph Newgarden shouldn't go anywhere for the next 10 years from Penske, but we'll see. Money talks.
Yeah. And Andretti Global interested in Newgarden. We'll see the interest originally for F1, but again, that deal is not happening for now. Still could happen in 2028. I don't know if that would be a move for him in 2028. But obviously, they're paying big salaries. Ericsson at $4 million, Herta at $7 million, and Kirkwood apparently at $3.5 million. And all three of those guys are capable of being F1 drivers. Let's not doubt that.
Absolutely.
I mean, Kirkwood doesn't have a test, but look, he's a very talented driver. You give him a test, he'll probably be able to do something with it. Other notes. So this is really cool. Verizon on their social media posted a short video where they did a test on the IMS road course with Will Power, and the strategist and the engineer, and you had a couple crew guys on site, but in terms of the guys on the headsets, they were all remote. You had a guy in Dallas, a guy in the Charlotte area, and a guy, I think, in Charlotte, and they did the test with the communication. And obviously it's an ad for Verizon and the 5G network, but it was a really cool, very well done video worth checking out on Verizon's social media channels. So promoting IndyCar. That's very positive.
I will have to check it out. I haven't seen that.
That's the kind of promotion you need from your sponsors, right?
Yes.
And speaking of testing, you also had Christian Rasmussen, Nolan Siegel, and Kiffin Simpson test at Texas Motor Speedway earlier this week for their rookie tests. You had a seat fit for Takuma Sato at the Ray Hall shop earlier this week. He'll be at the Indy Open Test April 10th and 11th. And a couple other driver notes. You have Able Motorsports signing Taylor Ferns of USAC to race the oval races with the program.
She's a pretty impressive Silver Crown driver.
You have Angela Cullen, who is a longtime trainer for Lewis Hamilton, she was at Thermal with Marcus Armstrong. I think we all recognize her.
Yeah, we do.
From F1. So that's pretty cool. Let's see what else. You have the silly season update and really the New Garden news kind of headlined that story from Marshall Pruitt. And there was another New Garden story by Nathan Brown a few weeks back. But again, he's going to be the guy that controls silly season.
He will be, if not the first domino, the big domino.
Yeah, it'll be Newgarden and then Christian Lundgaard and then probably everyone else.
Percentage chance that Joseph Newgarden's driving for another team next year?
30.
I feel even less. I would say 20%.
I just don't think it's very high because you're the top driver on one of the top teams. He's probably going to win a championship this year.
Ganassi's not going to pay you. They're already paying enough guys.
Here's the problem, right? The only team you can go to that's a top contending team is McLaren.
Right.
Like Andretti is locked in. They're not adding a fourth car. And they're not getting rid of the drivers they have.
They have a crap ton of money, though.
They do.
I wouldn't be surprised if they add a fourth car for Joseph Newgarden. But then again, if I'm Newgarden, that's not a situation I want to go in.
Yeah.
Same thing that... We've said it ad nauseum. The only two teams that can win championships are Penske and Ganassi in this series. Why leave one of them to go to one that can't?
Yeah, and I think Christian Lundgaard will get a seat at a top team if Ray Hall isn't willing to pay. But again, McLaren, I'm expecting two drivers to be out of seats at that team after this season.
Yeah, I think Pato Award may be the only one left.
Yes, so... We shall see. And then you always throw in IMSA guys, right? For Penske, like a Felipe Nasr, a Dane Cameron is possibilities. But yeah, we're talking silly season. We've had one race run. That checks out for IndyCar these days. Other notes on the driver front, Indy Lights driver. I don't like calling it by the official name. But Indy Lights driver, James Rowe. Notre Dame kind of inspired helmet, and he was on Wake Up the Echoes, which is the official Notre Dame podcast, but he'll have that for the Indy GP, a Notre Dame gold racing helmet. So that's cool.
Hmm. Cool.
So it's not like the typical gold helmet, but there's a clover on there and a lot of green. He's a Notre Dame fan. So that's a cool look. You get IndyCar in front of a different fan base. Always a good thing for that. Of note, 100 Days to Indy now streaming internationally on Paramount Plus.
Awesome.
So good news there. Obviously coming to Netflix, what, in like a week?
I think so.
So that's going to be exciting. You have the Hy-Vee Perks 250 at Iowa Speedway, which is the NASCAR Xfinity race. Uh-huh. Sold out.
Shocking.
Not shocked.
No, not at all.
Lola Cars,
back.
Obviously competed in kart. They are back. Formula E for their motorsport comeback. So that's pretty cool.
I skimmed the story, tried to see if any discussion about maybe further expansion into other series. Didn't see anything, but
it's a start.
If it's something you want to root, you know, I would root for it. And Lola, you hope they'd have some success in Formula E, and maybe that could grow into some other things. Maybe IndyCar, maybe... The ladder, you know, it's not the ladder, but we still refer to it as. So keep an eye on Lola. We'll see what happens.
Juncos Hollinger announces the first ever Spanish social channels for their team. JHR_ESP_.
I would have just presumed that they already had that.
Right? It's kind of surprising they didn't, but that's a good move. Pato Award's Big Head was spotted on WWE several days back behind The Rock. So that's some
was
good exposure.
It somewhere, was it in Indy or something? Or
it was on Monday Night Raw. I don't know where it was at, but
random.
It's never,
cool.
Never a bad thing.
No, not at all.
Let's see. We have a couple more things. I want to get several good tweets of the week this week. So that's actually going to be full. The Indy Card Exchange, April 14th, exclusive IndyCar event. Of course, the Parkside cards coming in, got mine in the mail earlier this week. They'll have specially made cards for drivers assigned, Connor Daly, Marcus Ericsson, Jack Harvey, Christian Lundgaard, and Felix Rosenquist, participating drivers for this event. Sunday, April 14th, 3 to 5 p.m., Indy Card Exchange, which is in Indianapolis off of, I believe, 96th Street. So they'll have trading card pack openings, a show car, ticket giveaways, Indy 500 celebration, and again, that autograph session, which will run from 3 to 4. So pretty cool event happening in Indy for that. And we have a book news. So Mark Monteith, longtime sports writer to Indianapolis, mentioned that Angelo Angelopoulos wrote an uncompleted manuscript on Bill Vukovich's life. It was to be published in 1960. It fell short of the finish line, but Monteith pushed it across. Vukovich, the man who wouldn't lift, ready to ship. It's now available on Amazon and bookstores, and for $26, including shipping from Half Court Press, PO Box 346, Fishers, Indiana 46038.
So jump on that if you're cool, a Vukovich fan.
Yeah, pretty cool product, pretty cool book, and I'm sure it'll be an interesting read as well. All right, anything that we missed?
A full podcast this week.
Actually, there was one thing I missed. So Zapata AI and Andretti Acquisition Corp announced the closing of their business combination. I don't know what any of this means, but Zapata AI shares to trade on NASDAQ stock exchange under new ticker symbol ZPTA. Obviously, Andretti has Winner, WNNR. I don't know what any of this means. I don't know if this means that it's continuing. I don't understand that.
I don't know. It's way above our heads.
Yes, but it's a thing. And it means something.
It's a thing. It means something.
Sorry, we're just not sure. Provide further insight on what this thing and what it means to you. But they've combined. So again, remember their SPAC or Special Purpose Acquisition Company, WNNR is the ticker. It'll now operate as Zapata AI, and it will begin trading April 1st, 2024, on NASDAQ. ZPTA and ZPTAW, the ticker symbols. So I think this is a good thing.
I think so. We're pretty sure. We're pretty confident this is good.
Considering
what it means,
they
though,
put out a press release, yeah. It's got to be a good thing.
Hopefully, I guess. Sure, why not?
All right, tweets of the week time. Stuff we understand.
Sometimes.
So the first tweet of the week, this from Hollywood Tony, on replying on Alex Pillow winning at Thermal. So is the $500,000 check signed over by Pillow to Zach Brown yet, or do we wait until later? Pato Ward tweeting, today in a picture, and it's him waiting in line at a porta potty.
Oh.
So that's how he described Saturday before the race, right? Saturday was March 23rd. Uh-huh. So that would have been the Saturday. Did not go well for him.
Hopefully he made it in time.
Scott McLaughlin did a Q&A and someone asked him, what are you going to do with your cut of 350K? And he said, pay off my house. LOL.
There you go.
So that's, well, a, I think that's a good deal.
All of us would do for 350,000.
Connor Daly, said, for those who are picking up new packs, boxes of the IndyCar Parkside cards, be on the lookout for a few unique signatures on some of the numbered cards that I threw in the mix. And he took photos. And the 20 car from Ed Carpenter Racing, autographed, mutually separated in quotes. also, MSR number 60 edition. You have U.S. Air Force 2021 number 47. Again, this is all Connor Daly, Ed Carpenter Racing 20 car. But again, he added these inscriptions. Also, Connor Daly autograph. And then, sorry, Jack, RLL number 30.
Ouch.
And then the final tweet of the week, and it's a banger, Steve Wittich. So the previous story was 100% clickbait since it was fairly well known what was likely going to happen. That's just a disgusting way to do business and so unethical. Not shocking, though. That's talking about the Jerry Forsyth purchase of the shares of Long Beach.
Well, yes, it's basically he's basically calling it a panic piece for clickbait. The initial story talking about NASCAR was interested in buying a stake in the Long Beach Grand Prix. So read into it what you will, what you won't. But there's some certain people around media, IndyCar, that don't like each other. And sometimes
they get pretty feisty from time to time.
Make it public on social media for all us to enjoy.
Yes, for our entertainment. And time now for our random split error driver of the week.
All right, we're going to the inaugural season of the IRL 96-97 season. I left it up on your browser over there and going with Mr. Mike Groff.
Yes, so he competed in this season with Bird Cunningham Racing. Now he was with AJ Foyt Enterprises and Walker Racing in 96, did Walker Racing at Indy in 96, finished 20th. And then was it New Hampshire and Las Vegas, fourth and then third to start the 96-97 season. But good results over the years and his limited IRL experience in that era. Sixth at Walt Disney World in the first ever race there in 96. Third at Phoenix, 20th at Indy. And then for the 96-97, again, a fourth at New Hampshire, third at Vegas, second at Walt Disney World, sixth at Phoenix, 12th at Indy. Did not start at Texas. Did not start the second race at New Hampshire. Did you know they did a second New Hampshire race?
I did not know that at all.
I did not know that either. And he was 14th at Charlotte. Didn't run Pikes Peak. Didn't run the second race at Las Vegas, the infamous one where the tape was destroyed.
Right? Yeah, yes.
Will never be seen.
Uh-huh.
He continued on in 98 with Burton Cunningham as well. It ran Disney, Phoenix, and Indy 7th, 15th, and 15th, respectively. And then finished with Team Extreme. I remember them.
Uh-huh.
With an So he went from racing in a Ford, right? There was a carryover from CART, to an Infiniti, Oldsmobile, back to Infiniti in 99. It was a DNQ at Indy in 1999. Obviously ran extensively in CART as well. But he was on a long list of drivers who didn't qualify. He was bumped out first alternate for Indy in 99. But you look at his Indy 500 career, didn't qualify
in the 2007, 1997.
Yeah. So he didn't qualify in 90, 91, started 18th, finished 24th. 92, he qualified the car that was raced by Scott Goodyear, of course, that finished second for Walker Racing. Didn't make an attempt with Ray Hall in 93. He ran for Penske in 94.
Huh.
With a Penske, well, a Penske chassis, but with Ray Hall, finished 31st, started 31st. 95, qualified for Brian Herta for Chip Ganassi Racing. Again, mentioned 96, started 11th, finished 20th. 97, started 18th, finished 12th. And in 1998, started 32nd, finished 15th, did not qualify in 1999. Obviously, made starts through several years in CART as well. Trying to find his best finish in CART. Several top 10s. Looks like it was a 6th at Phoenix in 1994 with Ray Hall Hogan Racing, his best finish in CART.
Several 8th place finishes there, but yeah, that 6th being overall at Phoenix in 94.
But in Indy Lights, he dominated as the 1989 Indy Lights champion.
Yes, he did, with Leading Edge Motorsport, and won, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4 races that year. Dominated.
Yeah, this is a dominant run for him, and of course, what, we had his brother on the podcast last offseason, right?
Robbie, right?
Yeah. So who also raced in CART and IRL from 1994 to 1998. So 62 years old, Mike Groff from California, obviously no longer racing, but had a pretty extensive career across CART and IRL for the better part of a decade.
That he did. Mike Groff, this week's random split era driver of the week.
And that does it for us. Next week, we'll be back. Justin will be live on location as continues to work to bring a street course race to a location in Florida.
Yeah. Still working on that Pensacola street race. So,
But we'll be back next week. I'm sure some news will come down. We'll also get you set for the Indy Open Test. I think the Indy 500 entry list is also set to come out next week. We shall see. But looking forward to next week. And again, we don't have to rail on thermal anymore. So for Justin Kinney, I am Caleb Atch. Thanks for joining us on New Track Record Podcast.
Podcasts by Federated Media.